Okay, welcome. My name is Divine. I am a resident, and this is episode 147 of the Divine Intervention Podcasts. And in this podcast, I'm going to be talking about anatomy. Although, to be honest, I think I'm going to call this the whys of anatomy. The thing is, anatomy is classically a subject that, you know, people hate. It's a ton of memorization and all that. And don't get me wrong, anatomy is a ton of memorization. But the thing is, anatomy is, again, unfortunately, high yield for step one. And it's also high yield in med school, right? It's one of those things, it's almost like your baptism when you get into med school. That's the very first thing most people tend to encounter. So this podcast, I'm going to title it The Whys of Anatomy. And this Whys of Anatomy series I'm going to be doing, I am going to be focusing primarily on the limbs, like the upper limbs and the lower limbs. It's going to be in a series. And I will try my very best to make most of these podcasts within the next 5 to 7 days. So hopefully, if you're taking a med school anatomy course or you're studying for step one and you need to become a master at MSK anatomy, so basically limbs, hopefully you accomplish those goals with this. And again, obviously, I'm not going to be able to cover everything that's covered in a med school course or anything relating to anatomy. But I really do think that if you listen to this, it will give you most of the high yield things you'll see on step one and also a lot of the high yields that you'll see on a med school exam. A med school like limbs anatomy exam. And furthermore, I would also, again, like I said, try to, because again, many people think, oh, anatomy is all memorization. Yes, there's a lot of memorization, but again, anatomy is also quite mechanistic, especially when you look at it in that fashion. So where possible, I will try to explain my reasoning behind why certain things obtain in certain ways. So in this podcast, I'm going to start on the upper limbs and really I'm going to focus for the most part on the brachial plexus. I'll just talk for, you know, as long as I can, and then we'll pick up from here in the next part of the series. So the thing is, really, for the most part, right, the upper limb, if you're thinking in terms of like nerve supply, upper limb, you're thinking about the brachial plexus, right? And the thing is, the brachial plexus, you know, sort of starts from the C5 to T1 nerve roots of the spinal cord. And if you want to be a little more specific, it's more the anterior rami, right? Because if you think about it, right, these nerves, they break up into like anterior rami and posterior rami. The posterior rami, for the most part, they go to the back. But the anterior rami go to the limbs, okay, to your appendages, right, like your upper extremities. And the anterior rami of these, so I said like the brachial plexus is like C5 to T1. The anterior rami of like the C5 and 6 nerves, they kind of become bundled by connective tissue. When they become bundled by connective tissue, they form the upper trunk of the brachial plexus, okay. And the thing is, if you actually look at C8 and T1, the C8 and T1 anterior rami, again, they're also bunched up by connective tissue to form the lower trunk of the brachial plexus. The thing is, C7 kind of does its own thing, kind of chills on its own and becomes the middle trunk of the brachial plexus. Now, as the nerve fibers, right, you know, they keep moving from the neck, they begin to enter the axilla. Remember, the axilla is like the $5 word for armpit, essentially. You know, the thing that smells a lot when you're like in very humid weather. So those trunks, right, they keep going and then they divide to form divisions. Okay. And really, for the most part, each of those trunks, right, so like the upper trunk, the middle trunk, the lower trunk, they divide to form anterior and posterior divisions. So you may say, Divine, who cares? Well, like, why does this division into like, oh, each trunk becoming an anterior posterior division? Like, why does it happen? Well, the thing is, if you think about it, if you think about the process of embryology, right, the way your upper limbs develop is they essentially begin their lives as like evaginations of like ectoderm from the chest wall region of the body, right? And then these evaginations, they are all ectoderm, they ultimately form the skin. But the hollow of these evaginated like ectoderm ultimately gets filled with mesoderm. The thing is, these mesoderm cells that fill up those ectodermal evaginations, they kind of sort out into like two big groups, right? There's a group that forms a core, and then there's a group that forms around the core. The thing is, the group around the core, like the mesoderm, like the mesodermal cells that, you know, kind of form that core, they are super, super, super well packed together. And the thing is, because they are super well packed together, they sort of stay like dead center. Because again, like I said, they are well packed together. It should kind of make sense that these should begin to constitute the bones of the upper extremity, right? So like the humerus, the radius, the ulna, stuff like that, right? But on the surface of that dense core that's super well packed together, we have, you know, some more mesodermal cells that, you know, are kind of arranged more like in a loosey-goosey fashion, right? So they're not arranged like super well together. These loosey-goosey mesodermal cells ultimately form muscles. So if you're kind of thinking of it this way, basically, some of the muscles, they form in front of that dense core, dense core that ultimately gives rise to the bones of your upper extremity. But there are others that form at the back. They form behind that dense bony mesodermal core, okay? That is really, for the most part, why you have anterior and posterior compartments of the upper extremities, right? And remember, right, the anterior compartments, for the most part, they are flexors. The posterior compartments, for the most part, they are extensors, okay? So that's kind of why these upper, middle, and lower trunks of the brachial plexus have to divide into anterior and posterior divisions. So that is really why you have those anterior and posterior divisions, right? So that is exactly why the dichotomy from those trunks occurs with the brachial plexus, right? So if you really think about it, any anterior division fiber in the brachial plexus, it really does ultimately, you know, end up innervating an anterior compartment muscle, and I guess vice versa. Now, the thing is, after you form these divisions, right, the fibers, they keep moving through the axilla. These divisions ultimately, you know, end up forming structures that are named in reference to the relationships with the axillary artery, right? So, for example, like the anterior divisions of like the upper trunk, you take the anterior division of the upper and middle trunk, they sort of combine together to form the lateral cord of the brachial plexus. The thing is, the anterior division of the lower trunk, right, it just goes on its own and forms the medial cord of the brachial plexus. But the posterior divisions of all those trunks, right, so like posterior division of the upper trunk, posterior division of the middle trunk, posterior division of the lower trunk, they all kind of partner up together to form the posterior cord, okay? So we formed the lateral cord, which comes from the anterior divisions of the upper and middle trunk. We formed the medial cord that comes from the anterior division of the lower trunk. And then we formed the posterior cord that comes from the posterior divisions, all three posterior divisions of the upper, middle, and lower trunks coming together. Okay? And again, they are called lateral, medial, and posterior cord because that's how they are oriented in the arm relative to the axillary artery. Now, the thing is, as again, these things continue to progress further, each cord divides into two, right? So like the lateral cord, it forms the musculocutaneous nerve, and then it gives off a contribution to the median nerve, right? The medial cord forms the ulna nerve, but also, again, like I said, gives off a contribution to the median nerve, okay? And then the posterior cord essentially just, you know, breaks up to two nerves, like the axillary nerve and the radial nerves. So you essentially have five terminal nerves with the brachial plexus, right? You have five terminal nerves. And so like the musculocutaneous nerve, the ulnar nerve, the median nerve, the axillary nerve, and the radial nerve, right? And the thing is, to make things even easier for you, it should kind of make sense based on the early explanation I gave that the musculocutaneous nerve, the median nerve, and the ulnar nerves should only work with anterior division muscles in the upper extremity, right? Because they come from anterior divisions. Remember this whole thing I talked about like a few minutes ago relating to those like bony cores and all that stuff. That's why that matters, right? So you can already go right off the bat and say that, oh, you know what? Median nerve, musculocutaneous, ulnar nerve, they should do only anterior compartment muscles in the upper extremity. But the problem with, unfortunately, right? The thing is, these terminal branches, they sort of come off too late from the brachial plexus, right? They sort of come off in the arm. The thing is, we need some other nerves to essentially be given off along the way, right? So that we can also like innervate the more proximal muscles of the upper extremities, right? Like those muscles you find around the shoulder, those muscles you find around the axilla, right? That's what, unfortunately, makes the brachial plexus a lot more complicated than it should be. So I guess let's go ahead and focus on these anterior division terminal nerves, Okay, so again, like I said, there's three of them. Again, muscular cutaneous, median, ulnar. If you think about it, how many major parts are there in your upper extremity? Just look at your upper extremity. How many major parts are there, right? You have your arm, you have your forearm, and then you have your hand. So it should make approximate sense that these anterior division terminal branches ultimately should hold sway over like the innervation of the anterior divisions of like the arm, the forearm, and the hand, respectively. So again, work with me here for a second, right? There are three terminal anterior division derived terminal nerves, right? Muscular cutaneous, median, and ulnar. And your upper extremity has three parts: arm, forearm, and hand. Okay, so again, it should make approximate sense that these terminal branches should essentially hold sway in that order, in a sense. So like the muscular cutaneous nerve dealing with the arm, the median nerve dealing with the forearm, the ulnar nerve dealing with the hand. Again, these are rough approximations, but you'll see that just having these tools in your toolbox will make it a lot easier to memorize a lot of this material. So again, keep this construct at the back of your mind. It will help you hopefully realize that the brachial plexus is not as bad as everyone says it is, right? Again, as with most things in med school, if you pursue a course of understanding, it will make the process of memorization a lot easier and a lot more constructive, right? So let's jump into the muscular cutaneous nerve, right? So the muscular cutaneous nerve, it's C5, C6. The thing is, it essentially innervates all the muscles that constitute the anterior compartment of the arm. Like literally, that's it, right? You can already begin to see how this should make your memorization super easy, right? Because if you already know that, oh, the anterior compartment muscles in the upper extremities, they are all for the most part flexors, then you know that if a person lesions the muscular cutaneous nerve, that should produce problems with flexion of the arm at the elbow, right? And I mean, if you also, I guess, maybe want to add on some extra knowledge, the muscular cutaneous nerve, it also, you know, if you lesion that, you'll also have like issues with like supination, right? Remember, supination for the most part is controlled by the biceps brachii muscle. Now, if you jump to the median nerve, right? So the median nerve goes all the way from C5 to T1. You should hopefully be able to remember that it innervates all the muscles of the anterior compartment of the forearm, okay? Remember, your forearm starts at your elbow and progresses to your wrist, right? So your median nerve, it innervates all the muscles of the anterior compartment of the forearm, but there are some rare exceptions that I will get to. The way I kind of think about it is, for the forearm, the median nerve does essentially everything with some rare exceptions that go to the ulnar nerve. For the hand, the ulnar nerve does most of everything with some rare exceptions that go to the median nerve. That's a nice way to think about that. So really, if you lesion the median nerve, right, that should kind of produce issues with like wrist and like hand flexion, for example. Okay, and again, even if there are exceptions, right, the associated nerves should be a lot easier to remember, because if you're thinking about, if you're dealing with the function of flexion, which is like an anterior compartment function, it has to be an anterior division associated nerve fiber that does the job, right? So really, if you actually think about it, it so happens that the only anterior division terminal nerve that we have not talked about yet is the ulnar nerve, right? I mean, I've not really mentioned the ulnar nerve yet. I've talked about like the median nerve. I've talked about the muscular cutaneous nerve. The thing is, those exceptions in the forearm that are not carried over by the median nerve, those are actually controlled by the ulnar nerve, okay? So the ulnar nerve does those two exceptions in the forearm that are not taken over by the median nerve. And those two exceptions are like the innervation to flexor carpi ulnaris, right? I mean, it has ulnaris in the name, so that should tell you that it's innervated by the ulnar nerve. But also flexor digitorum profundus, your FDP, okay? It's at least the ulnar half of that muscle, because that muscle belly has two parts. It has an ulnar half and it has a medial half. The ulnar half is innervated by the ulnar nerve. The medial half is innervated by the median nerve, okay? So again, as a general construct, your median nerve for the most part deals with, because think about it, right? Your median nerve sort of runs along the lateral part of your forearm, right? So for the most part, as a general construct, your median nerve deals with the most lateral muscles in the hand, while your ulnar nerve deals with the most medial muscles in the hand. Okay, so your median nerve, it does some things in the hand, but for the most part, the Lord of the Rings for your hand is the ulnar nerve. So again, keep these general constructs in mind, and you will very likely not lose your way on exams. And I mean, I guess I can go ahead and talk about what the median nerve does in the hand, right? The thing is, for the most part, the median nerve, it helps with thumb opposition. Right, so like whenever you see the word pollicis, so POLLICIS, the anatomists refer to the thumb. Okay, so opposition of the thumb is done by opponens pollicis. That's done by the median nerve. Also, the thenar muscles, right? The thenar muscles are controlled by the median nerve. And again, that should make perfect sense because I just told you earlier that things that are lateral, if you're standing in the anatomic position, for the upper extremities are controlled by the median nerve. Things that are medial for the upper extremities, if you're standing in the anatomic position, are controlled by the ulnar nerve. Okay, and then the median nerve, it also controls some movements of the second and third digits, right? So it essentially helps you like flex your MCPs, right? So your metacarpophalangeal joints, and then it helps you extend your IP joints. Okay, helps you extend your IP joints, so like your PIPs and your DIPs, so your proximal interphalangeal joints, and then your distal interphalangeal joints. Essentially, your knuckles are your MCPs. Those are your metacarpophalangeal joints, and then the next sets of joints that come after your knuckles are your PIPs, your proximal interphalangeal joints, and then after that you have your DIPs or your distal interphalangeal joints. Now, really, those second and third digits, you'll see some anatomists refer to them as the second and third lumbricals. Second and third lumbrical just means second and third digit. Again, please notice those, your second and third digit, right? So like your index finger and your middle finger, those are the most lateral fingers you have in your hand. Those are like the fingers that are closest to the lateral side of your hand, closest to the median nerve, and those are the furthest away from the ulnar nerve. Okay, those are the furthest away from the ulnar nerve. And please don't forget, right? Essentially, your fingers, you have your thumb, and then you have four lumbricals. Okay, you have like lumbricals 2, 3, 4, and 5. Those essentially correspond to your other four digits, right? So like lumbrical 2 is your index finger, lumbrical 3 is your middle finger. Lumbrical 4 is your ring finger, and lumbrical 5 is your pinky. Okay, if you just remember all these things I said for the median nerve, every other thing in the hand, for the most part, from a motor perspective, is controlled by the ulnar nerve. So again, ulnar nerve. Again, I've sort of talked about like the musculocutaneous nerve. I've talked about the median nerve. So let me now talk about the ulnar nerve, right? So again, let's stick with our mantra, right? Ulnar nerve is CH to T1. Again, for the most part, it does everything in the anterior compartment of the hand, okay? With some rare exceptions, which I already mentioned, that are handled by the median nerve, okay? And the good thing about the hand is actually kind of easy because the hand is actually only has an anterior compartment if you're dealing with motor function. There is no such thing as like posterior compartment hand muscle. They essentially do not exist. So if we want to be a little more granular for the ulnar nerve, right? So the ulnar nerve actually, you know, it controls the muscles that lie between your metacarpal bones, okay? They lie between your metacarpal bones. Those are called your interosseous muscles, right? Just look at the name, interosseous. Osseous means bone. So if you have muscles that lie between bone, they should be called interosseous muscles. And the thing is, because these muscles kind of lie between your digits, it should really make sense that they either bring those digits together, right? So the adduct, so adduct, they adduct your digits. Those are done by your palmar interosseous muscles, or they take those digits apart. So they abduct your digits, right? Those are actually done by the dorsal interosseous muscles. And really, there's actually a kind of nice mnemonic that you've probably heard about, like the PAD and DAB mnemonics. Those really help you remember those things, right? So PAD, so your palmar interosseous muscles help with adduction. Your dorsal interosseous muscles help with abduction. And then if I just told you that the median nerve does the most lateral lumbricals, so like lumbricals 2 and 3, in terms of like flexing at the MCP and extending at your interphalangeal joint. So right, that means like your PIPs, DIPs. It should again hopefully make sense that your ulnar nerve does essentially the same thing, but it does those for your it does that function for your most medial lumbricals, right? So like lumbricals 4 and 5. And then really the ulnar nerve, it also, you know, kind of helps with like adducting your thumb, right? So like adductor pollicis. So adduct your thumb, adductor pollicis, that's done by the ulnar nerve. Your median nerve helps with opposing the thumb. Okay, again, opponens pollicis. That's really it for the anterior compartment muscles. I mean, you have your posterior compartment, like terminal nerves. Remember, for the most part, there's just two of those. There's like the axillary nerve, there's the radial nerve. I will talk about those next. In fact, let's go ahead and start with the axillary nerve. So the axillary nerve, right, kind of like the name tells you, axillary, right? For the most part, it's like C5, C6. It works in like the axilla and the proximal arm, okay? Really, for the most part, it only does two muscles. And actually, those two muscles are very easy to remember. Just remember the security company, ADT, and you're good to go for the axillary nerve, right? So your axillary nerve, that's the A. Does your deltoids, that's the D, and then your teres minor muscle. The thing is, the deltoids are probably the only ones we really care about, because your teres minor muscle, like the stuff it does, it's done much better by many other muscles. So the teres minor, no one really cares that much about it, especially on exams. But you need to remember that it's innervated for sure by the axillary nerve. And really, your deltoids, the thing they help you with for the most part is they help you abduct your arm at the shoulder, okay? Essentially, they help you abduct your arm, so like take your arm away from the body up to like 110 degrees, right? So like from like 15 degrees to like 110 degrees. And I guess as an aside, you should also remember that your axillary nerve also like controls sensation on the lateral surface of the arm. Really, every other posterior compartment muscle of the arm and forearm, those all get innervation from the radial nerve, okay? Those all get innervation from the radial nerve. Okay, again, if you notice, I'm not just throwing names of muscles at you. I'm focused more on concepts. For a med student, this is what will ultimately help carry you through med school, because med school is a crap ton of information. But if you focus on understanding concepts, it just makes it easier to organize information and commit them to memory. So, really, for the most part, again, every other posterior compartment muscle of the arm, forearm is done by the radial nerve. Because remember, that posterior cord of the brachial plexus only gives rise to two nerves, axillary and radial. And if I've already defined what is done by axillary, then that means every other thing posterior compartment-wise is done by the radial nerve. Okay, so your radial nerve, really, for the most part, it takes care of like extension of the arm at the elbow, extension of the forearm at the wrist, extension of the finger joints, okay? And I guess as an aside, right, it actually also controls our supination. So again, to summarize things, the brachial plexus nerves from C5 to T1, they work in a fairly logical means with respect to innervation, right? Like your more proximal muscles in the upper extremities, they are controlled by C5, C6. The more distal muscles in your upper extremities are controlled by C8, T1. So your shoulder should be primarily C5, C6. Your hand should be primarily C8, T1, regardless of what nerve it is, right? And then for your in-betweeners, right, you can say that like your distal arm and your, remember your arm goes from your shoulder to your elbow, right? So your distal arm, your proximal forearm, as a rough approximation, should be innervated by like C6 to C7, right? And then you're more like, I guess like your distal forearm, and I guess your proximal hand should get like C7, C8. So that's it with regards to motor innervation. And again, I will say some things at the end, because you may say, Divine, in my class or whatever, I learned about a lot more muscles than you're leading on with. I'll say some things at the end, right? So let's, I guess, sort of jump real quick into the sensory innervation of the upper extremities, right? Sensory innervation, upper extremities, super easy, right? The big things you want to remember with the upper extremities are that your lateral arm is axillary nerve territory. Okay, sensation for your posterior forearm is radial nerve territory for the most part. But really, with regards to sensation of the upper extremity, the big area that is focused on exams, like med school exams, the USMLE Step 1 exam, for the most part is the hand. the sensation in the hand is the big one that shows up on tests. And really, the critical thing you want to remember here, again, because many people say like, oh, Divine, I've looked at this super complex diagram. I don't know how to commit all this to memory. Let me give you a trick. The big thing you want to remember, the critical concept you want to remember, is that the middle of your fourth digit, so basically your ring finger, serves as a big, important boundary. I'll repeat it again. The middle of your fourth digit serves as a big, important boundary. The thing is, for sensation of the hand, it makes sense to learn things by the palmar surface of the hand, right? So the palmar surface, if you're standing in an atomic position, your palmar surface is the surface that has all those lines, right? Like the lined surface of your hand, if you may. Okay, so we learn things by the palmar surface and the dorsal surface. The dorsal surface is the side where, if you're standing in the anatomic position, it sort of faces your back. So for the palmar surface of your hand, right, if you take the middle of the fourth digit as the boundary, we essentially share sensory innervation between the median nerve and the ulnar nerve. So it should already begin to make sense that the more lateral side of this boundary should be controlled by your median nerve sensory-wise, while the more medial side of the boundary should be controlled by the ulnar nerve. So please, please, I know I've been saying median, medial, median, medial. Please, don't mistake the median nerve as being with the medial surface of the body. That is not the kind of knowledge transfer you want to make on your exam. The medial side of your hand is controlled by the ulnar nerve. The lateral side of your hand is controlled by your median nerve. Okay? And really, for the dorsal surface, again, if you're using the middle of the fourth digit as your boundary, you essentially share sensory innervation between the ulnar nerve and the radial nerve. Okay? So again, it should make sense that the more lateral side of the boundary should be taken up by the radial nerve, while the more medial side should, as I've said, for like the palmar surface, should be taken up by the ulnar nerve, right? So essentially, the ulnar nerve controls sensation on the medial side of the hand on both the palmar and the dorsal surfaces. But for the palmar surface, the median nerve does the lateral side of that magic boundary, right? Middle of the fourth digit. And then, so your median nerve does the lateral side on the palmar surface. Your radial nerve does the other side, right? Like the lateral side on the dorsal surface. So again, it should be super easy to remember because, again, your median nerve is the anterior compartment, like bigwig nerve. Your radial nerve is a posterior compartment, like bigwig nerve, right? So it should make sense that the anterior, if you're standing in the anatomic position, your anterior hand, your palmar surface, the lateral side should be controlled by the median nerve. But if you're standing in the anatomic position, posterior surface, that's the dorsal surface of your hand, should be controlled by the radial nerve, okay? By the radial nerve. So I guess before I sort of end things here, I guess one super high yield offshoot I should, I guess, sort of bring to your attention is carpal tunnel syndrome, right? Carpal tunnel syndrome is tested a lot. I'll probably talk about it in a later podcast. But the thing is, carpal tunnel syndrome does not, it's very high yield to know for exams that it does not affect sensation on the palm. Because the thing is, the branch of the median nerve that does sensation on the palm, at least the lateral surface of the palm, right, is the branch of the median nerve called the palmar cutaneous branch of the median nerve. Okay, the thing is, this nerve actually comes off of the median nerve before the median nerve traverses the flexor retinaculum, which essentially forms the upper boundary of the carpal tunnel. So really, in the next podcast, I will essentially talk about this same material, although I'll throw in some other details in the next podcast, but I'll sort of bring it together in a different format, right? So I'll essentially try to work my way backwards. Kind of think of it like learning OCHEM, where you learn the mechanisms, and then you then work your way backwards in the process of like organic synthesis from like product to starting reagent or whatever. And again, the main goal of this podcast, really, for the most part, I wanted to demystify the innervation of the upper extremities, aka the brachial plexus, and sort of help you like lay a solid foundation that should make things a lot easier to understand. If you listen to this podcast and then go back and listen to your class, like lectures or whatever, or you study for step one or whatever, you see that, oh, this is actually a lot easier to remember if you're learning all those details. But if you're like learning all those details without like a conceptual framework, I find it just much harder for people to work with. So hopefully this podcast has hopefully, you know, laid a solid foundation for you, made things much easier to understand. And again, remember, this stuff is certainly tested on the USMLE Step 1 exam and the other USMLEs in a more, like, I guess, in a more limited fashion. But believe it or not, Adademi shows up in Step 2 CK and Step 3. So that's just something to keep at the back of your mind. And as I mentioned at the end of every podcast, I do offer one-on-one tutoring for all the USMLE exams, right? So Step 1, 2 CK, Step 2 CS, Step 3. And then also the preclinical, like med school exams, and the third year clerkship shelf exams. And then I also do this thing I call a longitudinal tutoring, where I, so let's say you're a newly minted first year or second year, I tutor you for all your, like, your preclinical exams. And then I tutor you during your dedicated period for Step 1. But the thing is, as I tutor you during your preclinical exams, I also tutor you for Step 1 with each block. And everyone I've done this with, they've been like wildly successful on their USMLEs. Same deal with the third years. I tutor you for your shelf exams, and then I tutor you during your Step 2 CK dedicated period. But as I tutor you for your shelf, I tutor you very specifically for Step 2 CK. And again, it has worked out super, super well. And then if you're a college student or you have a college buddy, and you need tutoring for many of these college exams, like general chemistry, organic chemistry, physics, biochemistry, physiology, histology, I do offer tutoring for all those things. And then if you're a med student applying to a residency, so like an ERAS application, or a college student applying to med school, so like an AMCAS application, I do offer like one-on-one advising, or I guess you could call it consultant for that. So like writing rec letters, assistance with personal statements, editing your applications, mock interviews. I've worked with tons of people on those things, and they've all been, again, for the vast majority of the people I've worked with, they have done really well. So I do hope you get something from this podcast. I'll follow up with another podcast very soon. So have a wonderful rest of your day. I'll see you next time. God bless you. Thank you.